Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we have two stories related to Britain. You will also hear a story about an American filmmaker putting a modern spin on an old Greek comedy. And after As It Is, Anna Mateo brings you today's health and lifestyle report. But first, a new report says the wealth of Great Britain's top 10% increased 21% between 2012 and 2014. That is 3 times faster than the bottom half of the population. The government report increases worries about inequality. Katie Weaver has more.
The British government reports that the country's richest people are increasing their wealth 3 times as fast as the poorest. The report is adding to worries about inequality in Britain. The Office of National Statistics says the wealth of the richest 10% of British households increased by 21% between 2012 and 2014. It says much of the increase came from a rise in private retirement payments, called pensions. The wealth of the lowest half of all households increased by just 7% during the same time. The report said the country's total household wealth increased 18% to $16.6 trillion. The richest 10% of households control about 45% of all the country's wealth. The poorest 10% control less than 1%. The Conservative Party of Prime Minister David Cameron notes that the country has record levels of employment. And it says Britain's economic growth is the fastest among developed economies. It says that shows living standards are improving across the country. But opposition parties say the country's poorest people are suffering from the government's plan to end the deficit by making large cuts to social welfare programs. I'm Katie Weaver.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA, Learning English. Researchers say among people 25 and older, Americans are missing more teeth than Britons. Ann Ball has more on dental care in the United States and Britain.
Many Americans believe Britons have bad teeth, but a new study shows Americans actually have more dental problems. The study was published in the British Medical Journal. Researchers from University College London, the National University of Columbia, and the Harvard School of Public Health found that among people 25 and older, Americans are missing more teeth. The researchers also found that poor people in the United States had worse teeth than poor people in Britain. People in Britain receive dental care through the National Health Service, which is funded by taxpayers. In the United States, people either pay for their dental care or buy dental insurance. Many poor people in the United States do not have dental insurance and cannot afford dental care. In 2004, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development found that Britain had the lowest number of people with decayed, missing, or filled teeth from among all of its 34 member states. The United States was in the middle of the rankings. I'm Ann Ball.
Here again is Katie Weaver with a story about a modern-day retelling of an ancient Greek comedy.
Filmmaker Spike Lee reached back thousands of years to a Greek comedy for the inspiration of his latest film, Chirac. The musical is a modern urban telling of the ancient Greek comedy, Lysistrata. In that story, wives stop having sex with their husbands to try to stop them from warring. Chirac combines the words for the places Chicago, Illinois, and Iraq. The name refers to two deadly battlefields: the Midwestern city, a victim of gang violence, and the war zone of Iraq.
Homicides in Chicago, Illinois, have surpassed the death toll of American special forces in Iraq.
The Spartans and the Trojans are two competing gangs in South Chicago. After an 11-year-old girl dies in the crossfire, the women in the area take action, or inaction. Lysistrata, the wife of Spartan gang leader Chirac, leads the group. She is played by Tiana Paris.
We force our men to negotiate peace by exercising conscious self-control and total abstinence from knocking the boot.
The character is talking about sex. The women refuse to have sex with their husbands and lovers until they stop the violence. Chirac explores the power of women in bringing an end to violence. Like Aristophanes' play, Lysistrata, Spike Lee's script is written in rhyming verse.
Dude, this is about life and death, about a community that's a wreck. And you want to sit here and talk about how women behave? Fool, we trying to free these slaves. Slaves to the madness, slaves to this violence. And what, you just want us to silence? We gonna make sure these fools put down these guns.
Director Lee told VOA that sexual boycott to stop wars is not just the stuff of comedy. It can work, he said.
A sex strike happened in Liberia earlier, I think 2004, a woman named Lima Gwabi won the Nobel Peace Prize for using that tactic, a sex strike, to stop the Second Civil War in Liberia. So it worked in ancient Greece, and it worked in Liberia. And there's a woman today who saw the trailer from Chirac, and she's starting a sex strike movement in Chicago.
The film deals with current political and social issues, including poverty, unemployment, racism, and guns in America. The film is critical of the United States for supporting foreign wars instead of ending violence at home. Chirac echoes the 2,500-year-old message of Lysistrata. Women have a unique power to end war. The legitimacy of that message, however, is debatable. Several critics already have raised objections. Ernest Owens is one of them. He is a nationally published opinion writer, originally from Chicago. He wrote in the Huffington Post after seeing the Chirac trailer. He expressed concern about seeing all those black women being used only for the discussion of sexual purpose of men. And of course, women around the world are fighters themselves. They serve in militaries, join rebel groups, and even are members of violent gangs in America. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. A California man who was feeling sick almost died recently from a shocking cause. 26-year-old Luis Ortiz went to a hospital because of a headache and nausea. When doctors examined him, they were shocked to find a tapeworm larva in his brain. The story gets stranger. The larva was still alive. The creature had caused a cyst to form inside his head. The cyst was restricting the flow of liquids to different areas of the brain. The situation was so serious that doctors said they had to perform an emergency operation to remove the larva. The Associated Press reports that a doctor who operated on Ortiz told him he had only 30 minutes to live. The California man told ABC News that when the doctor pulled the worm out of his head, it was still moving. Luis Ortiz was a student at California State University in Sacramento. He began experiencing headaches in late August, he told a local newspaper. But Ortiz said he did not think the headaches were serious. In September, he visited a friend and his parents in another city. That is when the pain got worse. His mother reportedly saw Ortiz throwing up. She took him to a hospital emergency room. Ortiz told ABC News that he was shocked. He said he couldn't believe something like that would happen to him. He said he did not know there was a parasite trying to ruin his life. The doctors saved Ortiz's life, however, the surgery also affected it. According to ABC News, Ortiz had to drop out of school and move back home. It said for now he is not permitted to work or drive a vehicle. Tapeworms and other parasitic worms usually infect a person's intestinal system. In rare cases, they infect the brain. Doctors suspect Ortiz ate something containing the tapeworm. You can get a tapeworm from food that is unclean and contaminated with tapeworm eggs. People can get them from eating infected, undercooked, or uncooked pork. Another type of tapeworm can infect beef. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the U.S. has about 1,000 reported cases of tapeworm each year. The CDC adds that tapeworms are more common in developing countries with poor public health systems. According to CDC officials, signs of infection with a parasitic worm include stomach pain, nausea, loss of appetite, and weight loss. Other signs are a lasting headache and vomiting. The best way to avoid a tapeworm infection is to wash fruits and vegetables. Also, make sure meat is cooked thoroughly. The CDC suggests cooking all meats to an internal temperature of at least 63 degrees Celsius. Separately, the CDC says tapeworms could spread cancer. This comes after studying the case of a Colombian man who died after catching the disease from a tapeworm that had infected him. I'm Ana Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Soon after the Civil War ended in 1865, thousands of Americans began to move west to settle the land. The great movement of settlers continued for almost 40 years. The Great Empty West, in time, became fully settled. The discovery of gold had already started a great movement to California. This week in our series, Robert Bostick and Leo Scully tell about the gold rush and the important part cowboys played in settling the West.
Men had rushed to the gold fields with hopes of becoming rich. A few found gold. The others found only hard work and high prices. When their money was gone, they gave up the search for gold. But they stayed in California to become farmers or businessmen or laborers. Some never gave up the search for riches. They moved back toward the east, searching for gold and silver in the wild country between California and the Mississippi River.
Each new gold rush brought more people from the east. Mining camps quickly grew into towns with stores, hotels, even newspapers. Most of these towns, however, lived only as long as gold was easy to find. Then they began to die. In some of the gold centers, big mining companies bought up all the land from those who first claimed it. These companies brought in mining machines that could dig out the gold from deep underground and separate it from the rock that held it. These companies needed equipment and other supplies. Transportation companies were formed. They carried supplies to the mining camps in huge wagon trains pulled by slow-moving oxen. Roads were built, and in some places, railroads.
The great wealth taken from the gold and silver mines was usually invested in other businesses: shipping, railroads, factories, stores, land companies. More jobs were created in the West, and living conditions got better. More and more people decided to leave the crowded East for a new life in the West. But the big Eastern cities continued to grow. New factories and industrial centers were built. People moved from the farms to find work in the cities.
The growth of these industrial centers created a big demand for food, especially meat. Chicago quickly became the heart of the meat industry. Railroads brought animals to Chicago, where packing companies killed them and prepared the meat for eastern markets. Special railroad cars kept the meat cold so it would remain fresh until sold. As the meat industry grew, the demand for fresh meat increased. More and more cattle were needed.
There were millions of cattle in Texas, but no way to get them to the eastern markets. The closest point on the railroad was Sedalia, Missouri, more than 1,000 kilometers away. Some cattlemen believed it might be possible to walk cattle to the railroad, letting them feed on the open grassland along the way. Early in 1866, a group of Texas cattlemen decided to try this. They put together a huge herd of more than 260,000 cattle and set out for Sedalia.
There were many problems on that first cattle drive. The country was rough, grass and water, sometimes hard to find. Bandits and Indians followed the herd, trying to steal cattle. Farmers had put up fences in some areas, blocking the way. Most of the great herd was lost along the way, but the cattlemen believed they had proved that cattle could be walked long distances to the railroad. They believed a better way to the railroad could be found, with plenty of grass and water.
The cattlemen got the Kansas Pacific Railroad to extend its line west to Abilene, Kansas. There was a good trail from Texas to Abilene. Cattlemen began moving their herds up this trail, across the Oklahoma Territory, and into Kansas. At Abilene, the cattle were put on trains and carried to Chicago. In the next 4 years, more than 1.5 million cattle were moved north over the Chisholm Trail to Kansas. Other trails were found as the railroad moved farther west.
Trail drives usually began with the spring roundup. Cattlemen would send out cowboys to search the open grasslands for their animals. As the cattle were brought in, the young animals were branded, marked, to show who owned them. Then they were released with their mothers to spend another year in the open country. The other cattle were put together for the long drive to Kansas. Usually, they were moved in groups of 2,500 to 5,000 animals. 12 to 20 cowboys took them up the trail.
The cowboys worked hard on a trail drive. They had to keep the herd together day and night and protect it from bad men and Indians. They had to keep the cattle from moving too fast or running away. If they moved too fast, they would lose weight, and their owner would not get as much money for them. The cowboys would walk the cattle only 20 to 30 kilometers a day. The cattle could feed all night and part of the morning before starting each day. If the grass was good and the herd moved slowly, the cattle would get heavier and bring more money.
In the early 1880s, the price of cattle rose to $50 each, and many cattlemen became rich. Business was so good that a $5,000 investment in the cattle industry could make $45,000 in 4 years. More and more people began raising cattle, and early cattlemen greatly increased the size of their herds. Within a few years, there was not enough grass for all the cattle, especially along the trails. There was so much meat that the price began to fall.
There were two severe winters that killed hundreds of thousands of cattle. An extremely dry summer killed the grass, and thousands more died of hunger. The cattle industry itself almost died. Cattlemen also had problems with farmers and sheepmen. Farmers coming west would claim grassland used by the cattle growers. They would put up fences and plow up the land to plant crops. Other settlers brought huge herds of sheep to compete with cattle for the grass, and the sheep always won. Cattle would not eat grass where sheep had eaten. Violence broke out. Cattle growers fought the farmers and sheepmen for control of the land. The cattlemen finally had to settle land of their own, putting up fences and cutting the size of their herds. They no longer could let their cattle run free on public lands.
By the late 1800s, the years of the cowboys were ending. But the story of the cowboy and his difficult life would not be forgotten. Even today, the cowboy lives in movies, on television, and in books. When one thinks of the Wild West of America, he does not think of the miners who opened the way to the West, nor does he think of the men who struggled to build the first railroads across the wild land. And one does not think of the farmers who pushed slowly westward to fence, plow, and plant the land.
The words Wild West bring to mind just one character, the cowboy. His difficult fight to protect his cattle on the long trail was an exciting story. It has been told by many writers. Perhaps the best known was a young Easterner, Owen Wister. He worked as a cattleman for several years, then wrote about the heroic life of the cowboy in a book called The Virginian. Another Easterner who came west to learn about the cowboy was the artist Frederick Remington. Remington was a cowboy for only 2 years, but he spent the rest of his life painting pictures of the West and writing about it. His exciting works made the West and the cowboy come to life for millions who never saw a real cowboy.
The cowboy has also lived in music. He had his own kind of songs that told of his problems, his hopes, and his feelings. That will be our story next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Robert Bostick and Leo Scully. Transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs, along with historical images, are at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.